Hello and welcome to Simplicity Talks, a conversation exploring the issues and trends in the world of business and brand through our unique Siegel & Gale lens of simplicity. I'm Mitchell Cooper.
And I'm Rob Costello. And today we want our episode to be a little bit more on the educational side and really deep dive into our work and some of our thinking. It's been a long time, actually, since we've done an episode, so it's vastly overdue. And really looking forward to what we can be covering today. So we've been looking a lot recently at brand architecture. It's a concept that tries to give some structure, some clarity to portfolios, to business units, products, services, by pulling them apart, bringing them together, or killing them off entirely. And it can be considered at pretty much any stage of the business life cycle, but we generally see these decision makers, these executives taking an interest in it when they've, say, acquired or merged with another business, when they're looking to sell and need to be able to give a clear story to their investors, or when they realize that they've got all these brands within their portfolio and it's such a mess that they don't really know what to do with any of them, where they're cannibalizing each other in terms of market share and all these kinds of issues, and it's a big mess and they need to spring clean.
And to help us explore this world, we've brought in some of the Siegel & Gale heavies of brand architecture. We've got Rana Brightman, our Senior Strategy Director, and Ben Osborne, our Head of Insights. So welcome.
Thanks, guys. Really
Thank
happy
you.
To be here.
Not sure if heavies is really the right term.
Yeah, I didn't put that in there. That was, you gave me that absolute
clang. I'll take it.
Well, look, awesome to have you both here. Ben, a stalwart of Simplicity Talks. I think this might be your third episode
Completely.
With us.
I get the watch this time around, I think.
Wow.
But a first for Rana. Wonderful to have you here. And this is an element that you've had a lot of experience in terms of projects that you've worked and experiences that you've delivered for clients, etc. But it's, I think it's really important for our listeners that we kind of go to the basics. Let's look at the 101 of brand architecture and delve into what it is and how do you interpret it?
Absolutely. I think brand architecture is one of those areas where a lot of people often kind of go, no idea where to begin. I think that, you know, the name itself, brand architecture, just feels like quite a mammoth task. Mm. And I guess in the kind of discipline of brand consulting, it is one of those sort of areas where actually I think once you get past that initial fear of something quite big and daunting and a kind of mammoth task that you have ahead of you, it's actually one of those really interesting exercises where you can kind of get lost in to some degree in the logic. I mean, that's kind of really what it is. It's an exercise in logic. Mm. I think the best way to kind of break it down though is brand architecture is really about business strategy made visible. It's essentially the way in which brands, organizations, companies come about to really sort of look at themselves and present themselves in a manner that the outside world can understand. Yes, it looks at brands, it looks at logos, it looks at nomenclature, you know, the naming of products or even divisions. But really, I think the most important thing is to see this as an outside-in exercise, not an inside-out exercise. It's not an exercise in sort of organizing how how a company comes together, how the organization sort of should structure itself. It's also not about sort of developing portfolio SKUs to some degree. Yes, it might touch on that, but really, I think first and foremost, it's about identifying who you are, who your audiences are, and what is the relationship that you have between your brand, your offers, your products, your services, your relationships, your partnerships in relation to all those different audiences. So if we were to kind of break it down, it's kind of about the proposition, the messaging, and the personality of your brand and all of the brands within your kind of wider world.
So who is the audience for a brand architecture piece then? From the sounds of it, would I be right in saying it's actually not aimed at customers, or is it?
No. I think, for instance, so obviously the company, you know, the client, our clients, the companies would be looking at their own architecture. So let's just take, you kind of talked about mergers and acquisitions, for instance. So, you know, if a business over time has acquired many businesses, it might have started off with quite a simple architecture in terms of its brand or its number of brands and products that it takes to market. But if it goes about acquiring lots of businesses over time, its architecture will evolve. It will actually start to become, depending on those acquisitions and how it treats those acquisitions, far more complex. It will have different brands in its portfolio that it needs to consider. So when we come to look at architecture, of course, it's kind of the client's remit, but really the audience for a successful architecture is the client's or the business's stakeholders. Mm. So from that, it would be its customers and also, you know, its customers' customers. So, you know, in some cases, we're looking at kind of the end user, the consumer.
Mm. And I would just add one thing to that. I think it's kind of interesting when we think about judging brand architecture and almost looking at a successful jobs being done. I think it's very easy for clients to think it is just about being tidy. It's something which is all very organized. When in reality, when you look through the consumer's eyes, you have to think, is it fulfilling its fundamental purpose of making navigation easier, making their life simpler?
The choices they make.
Mm. Exactly.
How should they know which service, which brand to choose? And I think part of that is kind of it comes back to, you know, making their lives easier. It's both making their customers and their stakeholders' lives easier, but also then ultimately internally it will make life easier for their businesses as well.
Mm. And I suppose within the world of brand consulting, we can sometimes maybe get a little bit tied up in terms of that terminology that we use. The other kind of term that we hear is portfolio architecture, and mixed in with brand architecture. Rana, what's your take on this in terms of, you know, is this the same thing? Is architecture too rigid a concept, or is it too rigid a wording for what it's actually doing? And is that something that we should be trying to get away from?
I think it's just, it's a good question. I think, you know, yes, people might use terms like portfolio strategy, portfolio management. There's two different things at play here. Firstly, it's kind of looking at, as a business, what is it you're dealing with in terms of the products and the services you have? And how do you decide to go to market with them?
Mm.
Okay, so that's kind of almost the portfolio piece. The brand architecture is more really about how you then sort of structure that. It's to do with the relationship between the different entities, the different brands, and how, you know, what is the structure that's in place? What are the relationships between the moving parts? How do they then relate to the audiences that they're supposed to be fulfilling?
And so how do you work out which pieces should fit where?
So every situation varies depending on the client. I mean, typically there's a number of steps that you go through to organise brand architecture. You're looking at the structure of the architecture, you're looking at the logic, you're looking at the relationships. But typically, I think if you look across the board at all the brands that exist in the world, they're generally, you know, four typical models that you might explore when it comes to how you organize yourself. And I guess if you could take them at two extremes. So on the one hand, you have something which is known as a branded house, which, you know, again, this is sort of not our terminology. It's quite common terminology that's used out there, but you could also call it a master branded strategy, whereby the brand at the top, the kind of corporate entity, is also a brand that kind of translates all the way through down to kind of products and services. So everything that comes from that brand is heavily branded. SAP is quite interesting. This is an organization that we've been working with them for a number of years. And when they first started out, they were very much known as an enterprise resource planning software provider, and their big ambition was, how do we become a strategic partner to clients?
Mm.
So they needed to be more than just the kind of hardware or software. They need to actually think about what they had in the marketplace. And so they went on an aggressive long-term strategy of acquiring lots of different businesses. And so obviously their architecture evolved over that time. They had lots of different brands to consider. And then there was an exercise whereby it's like, well, what do we go to market with? Because we can't possibly go out there with all these different brands. And what value do all of these different brands bring back to SAP? So it was a huge piece of work that was done there, you know, particularly kind of using research to identify what was the driver of preference. And really, SAP has quite a strong name. So their strategy has been over time to turn those acquired businesses and those discrete brands that were looking at those specialist areas through a migration strategy, whereby they then were endorsed by SAP. And more recently, we are now starting to see them kind of fold into a master branded proposition.
Mm.
So let's just take Hybris has gone from Hybris with a SAP endorsement, and I believe now it's the first brand out there that now, if you kind of go to access it, it's known as SAP Customer Experience. So there's two extremes. You have the branded house at the one end, which is obviously everything that is kind of heavily master branded. So you could think of this as being kind of the Virgin world, you know, Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Money.
Virgin Cola, great one.
And at the other extreme, we have a flip on the name. It's a house of brands. And typically we see our sort of FMCG players like the Unilevers and the
P&G,
yeah. Exactly, whereby they've got very strong consumer brands and sort of they sort of live in their own sort of right and they serve discrete audiences with a very specific proposition and a purpose. And more interestingly, I think what we have in the middle, we're starting to see more of the endorsement strategy and also more of a hybrid. Now, some might argue that hybrid approach where you might have some aspects of your architecture that are master branded, others that have an endorsement, maybe there are some that have a discrete brand. Some might argue, you know, is that a bit of a cop-out? You know, have you really sort of done that because you just can't be bothered to invest in doing a proper architecture job? But I'd challenge that and I'd actually say, well, no, it really does depend on, you know, your audiences, your objectives as a business, what your business strategy is. Because I think any of those models can apply to anyone. I think it's the process that you go through. So coming back to it, almost, what is the business ambition? What is the ultimate structure? What are those relationships? What is the logic that we're looking to fulfill?
And I suppose, Ben, to kind of bring you into the mix here, you know, we always talk about ourselves as being fact-based. It's all about the insight that then informs that strategy. From a research perspective, how do you begin to look at the complexities of a portfolio and what things do you have to explore?
And how can you take the kind of guesswork out of those decisions that you're making?
No, absolutely. So I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. Essentially, if we have, you know, going into any exercise, we have quite a few ideas about what that scenario might be. You know, so we kind of have a very good hypothesis around what models we could follow. But the question is, which ones are right for this company, for their audiences, for their stakeholders, and as well, I guess, addressing all of those hypotheses that exist in the business. So specifically, if you have mergers between two companies, you often have two very senior people who feel like their brand should live and the other brand should die, or both brands should live, even though for the consumer, obviously, they're having to navigate two coexisting brands which might share the same space, have the same value proposition, which obviously injects a lot of confusion. So what we do is we actually conduct research with the consumer, with the end user of the architecture itself. And the first thing is to understand actually how many propositions are they engaging with? What is the actual degree of differentiation between two brands which might coexist in the same space? And a really good example of this, we did some work with Wyndham Hotels. Again, a big hotel chain with, you know, relatively traditional tiering in terms of the categories in hotels. So for example, in the economy space, they'll have coexisting brands. And the big exercise we went was actually to the consumer, are those brands differentiated enough? Do they coexist too much to actually cannibalize each other and actually quantify the degree of cannibalization? And also explore whether or not we'd be able to create a gap between them, or actually we would have to kill one of those brands and see where the share went. So actually what you do is you conduct a thing called eye-opener, understand the drivers, understand how these brands are fulfilling the end user's needs. And then what we do as well, an output of the eye-opener is a simulator. And you can test these scenarios. We can say what would happen if you removed one of these hotel brands, for example, Wyndham. Would the customers then go to the comparable brand within the network, or would they go elsewhere? We can also sort of understand, going back to the bigger, the strategies, the different models in architecture, we can simulate what would happen if we had a stronger endorsement between the brands. We could look at what would happen if you injected, let's say, a completely new brand to fill a gap in the portfolio. And what this does is it removes all of that guesswork, because we start to project the actual real world impact. And going back to, you know, the actual way you can judge a architecture, it's whether it's intuitive, it's whether it's easy to navigate, but most importantly, whether it is having the positive added value impact on the brand, whether it is building incremental attachment, incremental engagement, or obviously the ideal is having optimal share throughout the bigger portfolio.
And I suppose that is a question on this validation element of how do we, you know, can we recognize the value being built in there? And I suppose that's one of the benefits of undertaking an architecture exercise.
Completely. And I think the other thing which coexists with a more traditional, let's say, brand research with consumers is also thinking about employees. Because often when you have mergers and acquisitions, you bring together very different cultures. And, you know, there's a challenge of immediately creating a divided workforce, because you almost have two entities, two brand entities, and you have competing champions for these two different entities who are not almost advocating the new thing, almost working together. And so one of the things, again, we can do is conduct research with employees and understand what is that common red thread between the two cultures, and use that to start to, you know, tack together an employee engagement plan, which will create something new, something incremental and additive, which is obviously what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's not easy. I think another example would help is the recent work that we've been doing with Lenzing. So they're a multinational cellulose fiber manufacturer. They're in the business of actually producing fibers that really do sort of shape everyday life. They're in the clothes that we wear, the wipes that we use, you know, even in sort of industrial fabrics, probably in some of the chairs that we're sitting on right now. Point being, actually, they're quite an interesting example, because they're an organization that over many years, obviously not particularly sort of marketing led, had developed technologies that they just trademarked without really considering kind of what the brand was. It was literally just trademarking a technology. And having trademarks and trying to protect those is really expensive work. I think over time, with how the world has changed, increasing competition from Asia, they realized that they really needed to kind of tidy up the house, so to speak. And, you know, we wouldn't be Siegel & Gehl if we didn't go in there and actually identify that, yes, we can do that. Architecture is absolutely sort of in our remit, but there's an opportunity to truly simplify what you're doing by actually digging deep into the corporate brand Lenzing, rather than going straight into the sort of the Lenzing Viscose or the Lenzing Modal product brands that they were effectively sort of going to market with. And Ben and I worked on this together, but it was actually the research that Ben's team was leading that identified that when it came to a couple of the product brands, there was such a similarity in value proposition, whereby it actually made no sense for them to kind of be investing in those brands and trying to kind of, you know, gain share in specific markets over that. So that was a big, ambitious sort of recommendation to come back with. And, well, it was substantiated by the kind of facts that we'd uncovered in the research. But arguably the kind of architecture recommendation was that you do need to actually look at combining these two and elevating a proposition that isn't just about homing in on the technology, but developing a brand that really speaks to the end user. So it's more of a promise to them, a kind of a real promise of what we're looking to deliver, rather than just simply a fiber technology.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a regular theme, I think, in architecture projects, where because technology is developed by scientists, by engineers, and the natural thing is for them to create a name and almost create this distinct thing. Whereas obviously for a consumer, they're not connecting with that in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And I think the Lenzing example is actually through the consumer's eyes, focusing on technology, focusing on a fiber type is just irrelevant.
Yeah, they want to know what difference it makes in their lives. But sorry, I do recall your initial question, which is how do you deal with that? And actually internally, Lenzing, that was a real challenge for them. Modal, for instance, it's a wonderful fibre. It's a premium fibre, but it's not a brand, you see. And so it was really, they were at risk of it becoming a generic. And so internally, we are still working with them and they're working really, really hard to educate their workforce, but also educate their value chain, their client, their customers, who ultimately will be buying their fibers and putting it in their garments to sell to the end user, the consumer, that actually Modal is just a fiber type. And there's a much bigger proposition and an ingredient brand here called Tencel that will actually fulfill what you're looking for. So it is an ongoing thing. It's about training. It's about education. It's about obviously kind of ensuring that you've got the facts with you. And again, it wasn't just about the eye opener that identified that sort of opportunity to simplify the architecture. We then went back and had to test that new proposition, the new sort of product brand with their customers, with their clients, to again, kind of give them the confidence. And it's ongoing. And I think one thing to also say just on that, that's the thing with architecture. The name itself can feel like something quite static and almost like once you have built it, it's, you know, you can't evolve it. And that's absolutely not the case. What we're looking at is a future state. whereby it's an ongoing exercise where we're working towards how we can build that. So whether it's lensing, and lensing will inevitably come up with new technologies and new innovations, or it could even be SAP. You know, SAP are in that process of migrating to a master brand strategy, but they'll continue acquiring companies that will either add to their existing capabilities or kind of create a new pillar for them. And then that's the question is, right, now that we've got this new technology or this new company, where does it sit in our future state architecture? Is there an opportunity for it to kind of slot in here? Or is it something completely new whereby we need to actually consider something different? Like, do we need to kind of create a new position for it? Could it be a sub-branded proposition? Could it be something that's endorsed? And that's kind of where those questions come up again.
We have covered some pretty good ground there, guys. Look, thank you so much for joining us for this Simplicity Talks.
Pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Good fun.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in again. And give us your feedback on our website, seagullgale.com, or via our Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook profiles with the handle @seagullgale.
Thanks very much, guys, and tune in next time. I guess